1980s, rates got as high as 20%. Paul Volcker increases interest rates 50 basis points over and over and over again until he got to 10%. He knew it was going to take this monumental effort over time consistently to bring inflation down to a number that they felt was healthy. But what did we do? 25 basis points, 50 basis points, 75 basis points. And I think that was a huge mistake.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Higher Standard Podcast, where we give you ultra premium, unfiltered truth when it comes to building your wealth and curating the lifestyle of your dreams. No games, no drama, and no shenanigans. I am your host, Chris Nahibi, and I'm here to help you distill the immense amount of information and disinformation out there on the interwebs and give you the opportunity to choose a higher standard for yourself. There are no gurus here, and no one gives a damn about how wealthy you look. I'm an attorney and a banker, amongst other things. Does that mean you should listen to me? Hell no. This is just full disclosure that while we talk about money, wealth, law, investing, and a lot of related topics, you should always speak to your own advisors for an opinion tailored to your unique investment perspective. I am obligated to tell you that nothing contained in this show is in fact legal or investment advice and is being provided solely for entertainment purposes. So sit back, relax your mind, and get ready for a different kind of podcast where we elevate your baseline in crispy, high-resolution audio. This isn't a different standard. It's the higher standard.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to the number one financial literacy podcast in the world.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. What is that?
I felt like you could have done a little better. A little low enthusiasm.
Really? That was Yeah. Jada Pinkett side eye you're giving me. Don't do that.
It was a little Jada Pinkett side eye. I'm telling you.
Very sassy tonight.
It was. No, you just.
I have a feeling this has to do with your low beard. You
want
to
get right into that?
You want to get into
it? Yeah, yeah. The beard is a little lower than normal. I like to lie to you all and tell you that it was because I wanted to look younger and see how much gray would go away. But I'll be honest with you. I don't have a chin. It's very off-putting.
You don't
right
have
now.
A chin. You have two chins.
I feel like I lost my power. It's like a unicorn losing its horn.
Wait, so is that what you picked, or did Andy fuck up?
No, I don't know who this Andy is that you speak of, but...
you don't?
Oh, you don't?
Yeah. Somebody sent him the link to this episode.
So no, seriously. Normally, I didn't tell my wife this, so she's going to hear this on the show. Normally, you know, my wife and my son, my son goes to bed, and either my wife or I will lay in the bed with him, which my wife is laying in the bed with him tonight. He has never, ever gotten out of bed and came to, like, bedroom. Normally, I sit outside the door and I just kind of hang out, read the articles for the show and, you know, get stuff done.
Right.
Take my 30 minutes to kind of do my thing.
Yes.
Well, I told my wife, I said, hey, I got to shave because tomorrow I got a big day. Well, the three of us got some, you know, big stuff to do later in the evening. So it'll be a full work day.
Right.
Out in the evening. So I had to get, you know, pretty.
Right.
So I'm in there. I have the razor on. You know, it's on like by your face, right? And I, you know, you got to trim this down. It's layers to this, you know?
You're right. Exactly.
It's not easy. And you start, you know, low on the sides and you get to the bottom here, and I always freeform the bottom because you know they don't have a clip big enough for you know what used to be my chin, my faux jawline, if you will.
Got it.
Yeah, well, for some reason, unbeknownst to me, my son comes in and goes, "Hey, Daddy, I want water." And of course, I'm mid like chin, and right into it.
Right in. So yeah.
I just took off like a big chunk of it, and I was like, son of.
Had to modify the whole. What do you call it? Wait, you can't say that about Carter. Relax.
No, I was saying the situation.
Relax.
Don't
clarify. Clarify.
The situation was not ideal.
Got it.
So anyway, he peed. I got him some water, and then I decided that it was irreparable at that point.
Mm-hmm. make it hard to make fun of now.
A cheese lost.
Right. Got no more Riz.
Got no more Riz. Speaking of Riz, however,
oh,
we had the one and only. The man, the myth, the legend, Noriel Rubini, is out in the press again. And for those of you who happen to watch the podcast on YouTube, I recommend this one. His glasses are absolutely fucking ridiculous. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
We'll talk a lot about the Fed policymakers delivering a hawkish vibe after this pause decision. Hawkish, dovish.
Again.
Do they cry? Do the doves cry?
They like it or they don't like it?
Doves cry.
What is that?
No? The Prince?
Oh, no.
Rodic City?
I'm not gonna lie, not a Prince fan.
Stop it.
Not a Prince fan.
Maroon, you want to do this or shall I?
No, I'll let it go.
No, come on. You can't let that go. Not a Prince fan?
Yeah, I'm just surprised he doesn't even know that song.
No, Michael Jackson only, baby.
Oh, wow.
His music was way
canceled. His music, with everything that Chris has said.
All the work canceled. We put into you being the co-host of this show, and now I've got to tell you to leave.
I like his music better.
No, you can't even say that anymore.
You can't say you like his music?
No.
Nope.
Dude, I feel guilty every time it comes on. I'm like random state. I'll be listening to like a random playlist, and it comes on. I'm like, shit. I'll be in the gym with headphones on going, I can't listen to this.
I can't even tell you.
It comes on, I'm like,
I can't even tell you the last time. Dude, this guy used to be the craziest Michael Jackson fan.
As he should have been back then.
Everyone was.
But now, not so much. Dude, I even have like qualms about, you know, early Michael. Yeah. Like Jackson 5 Michael.
Jackson 5 Michael.
Like I watched
that. I don't even know what he was getting. I know somewhat of what he's getting canceled for. I don't know the details behind
it. Don't do that. No. Don't do that.
What?
No, don't try to play innocent.
I don't.
While supporting someone.
I just know that he was canceled by the masses.
Stop.
Yeah.
He's
doing it again.
Such a villain move, bro. Like, that was terrible.
What am I doing?
You throw up the oop?
Yeah.
Give everyone a look?
No.
Silence? Oh, no. You guys are terrible. You guys are terrible human beings. Hold on.
Are you going to leave now, or are we going to wait until after the show?
After the show.
The opinions expressed in the podcast by Saeed Omar are not mine. They are his and his alone.
Okay? Oh, this is a great opportunity to enter the bleep again.
Yeah, I know. We should probably.
This is excessive. I said I liked his music more than Prince.
We're going to call that new button the villain button. Wow. Well, there goes the show, everybody. I'm sorry. That's it for tonight. Anyway, we'll move on. After we talk about the Fed policymakers living their hawkish vibe and clearly not Prince or Michael Jackson, we'll move on to why economists say it's a near certainty that housing inflation will soon fall. Those economists are economists that I love and respect.
Okay.
The ones who do not say that are economists that I do not love and respect.
I think we'll get into who those are.
We're going to name them by name.
Yeah.
I know what you're setting me up for. Again, another villain move. Okay.
No, I'll say it too. Yo, he's on the enemy list for the higher standard. Mark Zandi, not welcome on the show. He's not.
You know, I'm
but
having.
He really is.
No, he's not.
No, he's not.
No, Mark will not be allowed on the show ever. And invited him to be on the show at one point. And he's like, oh, yeah, get back to us. We're really busy. And he did like this whole CNBC circuit. And then. Mm-hmm. I came back and they like gave me the total a-hole shutdown. It wasn't. Here's the worst part. It's like, we're paying you guys like $500,000 a year for like services.
Yeah, it's for the bank.
You know, so I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know.
Right. Because he
give me the dignity of saying no, like directly. Don't pass it through one
because
of your
He works for Moody's. Yeah. Right?
He's Moody's chief economist.
Exactly.
Which again, like, I understand, like, somebody not wanting to be on. I understand, like, all that. Mm-hmm. But give me the dignity of like respectfully saying no.
Right.
Don't be like, he's not interested at this time. Thanks. Who are you? You're not even his assistant. Like, you're just like a middleman.
It was a person. It probably never made its way to Zandi.
Why didn't you just send me, like, no, they didn't. Why don't you just send me a carrier pigeon while you're at it?
Mm-hmm.
Bastard. Mm-hmm. So anyway, between last show, where I supported Lawrence Yoon's position, and now Zandi's doing a complete 180.
What's going on? Now, you know what that means. Next week, it's your boy.
No, Ramsey. Don't. I've already gotten soft on him, too.
You got soft?
Yeah, on Ramsey. Like, there is some advice that he gives out that I get it.
He doesn't keep... Okay.
And I would never say that solely to support the Mind Pump team who happened to have a love affair with him and visited his most recent event. I would never do that.
Right.
I'm expressing my own opinions, even though they happen to coincide with my lover, Adam.
Right.
Love you, Adam.
Love you, Adam.
So much. All right. We're going to talk about the amount of money the government's paying in interest on its debt every single day, and the number is staggering. Staggering.
A lot of money.
And then normally we'd go into Saeed's articles, but Saeed has effectively said that his articles are worthless and that we should just not bring them up because we never get to them.
That's a very non-villain thing of you to say, Chris.
That's a quote. Yeah. You said that, and I'm just repeating it back.
That's what I said?
I'm paraphrasing a little bit.
Got it. I'll find a way to work mine in. Let's bring
you
on our boy. I'm too excited.
Do.
I always do. Let's get right into our boy, Noriel.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So Noriel Roubini, who and you guys don't see the show notes. We have commentary in the show notes as to what we're going to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. Well, my commentary in this particular segment is noted to be PIMP, spelled Roubini.
Right. That's how it's pronounced.
Yeah. So he talks about the possibility of an economic crash. Now, I will say Roubini has always been a bit of a doom and gloom economist.
I mean, Dr. Doom,
who loves the boom boom. Now, he is aging a bit. So for those of you who Googled him with women, and you got all these images, the man you have now is a more mature version of that man.
He teaches at NYU, I believe.
But he's still wearing the same ridiculous fucking glasses.
Yeah, that's straight from the 80s.
Euro trash right there. That's all that is. Yeah, I mean, nobody's really wearing those, right?
Right.
That's not a real thing, unless you're going to Ibiza. Ibiza. Right. All right, well, this is a Yahoo Finance clip where he talks about his opinion, and I think it's got an interesting spin to it, but rather than give you all the sensational stuff, we're going to play about a minute of it for you, and then we're going to make fun of Saeed some more, and we're going to jump into breaking it down. Let's go.
That's always the best.
Tuesday's inflation print showed a continued deceleration in prices, but that core figure remains sticky. The question on everyone's mind, can the economy stay resilient or are we headed towards an economic crash? Joining us now is Nouriel Roubini, NYU Professor Emeritus for the Stern School of Business. So let's get right into this. Are we headed towards a crash? What's your outlook?
Well, if we define it by crash, economic downturn, a hard landing, I would say that the probability of a hard landing, meaning at least two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth, are higher than the one of a pure soft landing. The economy is slowing down. The Fed is raised rates, and in my view, they'll have to raise them more because inflation is still too high, both wage inflation and core. They'll take a pause, of course, in June, but might need to raise rates more in July and September. Credit growth is tightening because of the problems of the regional banks. The forward-looking indicator of economic activity, both for manufacturing and services, are entering a contractionary direction. The labor market is still creating jobs, but there are signs of a softening of the labor market. And also consumption growth is slowing down. Growth in the first quarter of the year was below potential at 1.3. In the second quarter, it might not be much better. And globally, the Eurozone is already in a recession, two quarters of negative growth in Q4 and Q1. And now there is a sharp slowdown of growth also in China that doesn't bode well for U.S. exports. So my baseline is still one of a recession as opposed to a soft landing. Yes.
Say no more. Nouriel Roubini's covered all the topics. Now, number one, I'm right out the gate. Okay, just top of my head stuff.
I just wish he would have said Binance.
Binance. I mean, he did, you know. I was stunned he didn't do this from the hot tub. Okay, I just thought that you'd see him laid back.
Do it from the rooftop.
With a martini or something, you know, classy.
Come on now.
Just, you know, and recession. I mean, you thought you would get that. But he hit every major topic except for housing. He did not touch housing.
He did not touch housing. Later in this interview, he actually dives into... This will really rest on the shoulders of banking sector and what, you know, credit tightening is going to look like for the rest of the economy.
And I was so proud of him that he acknowledged the banking sector, by the way.
Right.
So few economists had done that up until recently, and now we're starting to see a chorus of them saying, like, whoa, wait a minute.
Right.
So
there was that, and he also dove into manufacturers. Because what he went on to say is it's...
Manufacturer.
Manufacturers, right.
Manufacturer.
He says it's really going to... They're really going to determine where wage inflation goes and some of this price stability, because you got to remember, for manufacturers to remain profitable up until now, they would have had to increase their prices and pass those prices on to the consumers, right?
Yep.
So now when they go to renegotiate some of their contracts, or let's say some of their prices now come down, it's really going to rest on their shoulders whether they're going to continue to keep prices right where they're at, and if they're going to remain greedy, or if they too feel like there's maybe a softening in demand, and now some of those prices that they had passed on to the consumers, are they going to now pull it back?
Well, I mean, look, that's a great question. And I got to tell you, if you look at some of the commentary by the Fed, it doesn't acknowledge any of these things.
No, it doesn't.
But yet, now you're starting to see that the economists go, wait a minute, we're seeing some weakness in the banking sector.
Right.
In the manufacturing sector, in consumer discretionary spending, in credit card levels.
Right.
Right. All the things we have been telling you, the listener, that have been lagging indicators for a very, very long period of time.
Right.
And let me give everybody a little tip when it comes to watching the news or listening to anything sensational about the economy.
Okay.
Okay. Don't tell your friends. This one's going to make you a genius, okay? You'll be the guy at parties who can walk around going like, oh, yeah, I know more than all y'all assholes. It's going to be this right here, okay? Yeah. Economists look at the data that comes out, but they don't pontificate on the data that's coming out, generally speaking, because they don't want to, like scientists, they don't want to be disregarded by the community. So they want to point to concrete data that has been released mm-hmm. and give you an explanation for what that means.
Yes.
The problem with that is they don't take any risks on where the economy is going. So they very rarely foreshadow forward.
Makes sense.
They typically review backward.
Right.
The reason why we look at people like Noriel Rabini or Peter Schiff or these people who are constant naysayers or doom people, right? Doom right. and gloom.
Right.
Is because they are the ones willing to look at the data and assume what's going to happen next.
Got it.
But they constantly lose to pressure by people in the economist circles because those economists are looking at data that we have right now. But you know, so much of this is a lagging indicator.
It's true.
So all the warning signs they see, they can say, hey, this typically precedes X, this typically precedes Y.
Right.
That's why people like Noriel Rabini and several other economists are calling for a hard landing or a more painful period financially
right.
than anybody hopes that we have, because they're saying all the things we've done so far are going to have reverberating effects.
Right. And his definition, though, of what he considered to be a hard landing of just two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth.
That's just a recession.
That's just
kids.
A recession. That's the one thing aspect about this. I was like, wait a minute. I would consider a hard landing like a deep recession, right? Where there's maybe unemployment will get up to somewhere like 8, 9, 10%, right?
It still may.
It remains to be seen. Something he did say, though, with there being some softening in the labor market. Odun, can you please pull up that article that I had from the Wall Street Journal? It had to do with employers. We're starting here. Lots of hiring, but not so much working from the Wall Street Journal.
Anecdotally, I pulled this up, read it, but it was not necessarily show worthy.
Really? Okay, so this is the aspect of it that I thought was very interesting. So typically in recent times or historically, what you'll see is when employers ask employees to work less hours as opposed to laying them off, that's a signal for what's to come. Like around the corner, we're going to see major layoffs, right?
Yeah, they're trying to cut the amount of wages they're paying.
Yes.
If they can cut out the superfluous stuff or the time and a half type payments.
Yes.
And just stick to their basic payroll, mm-hmm. maybe they can avoid further cuts. But most cases, you don't get there.
Right. And the number of hours worked doesn't decline by a whole lot. But what we're seeing is, okay, payrolls rose by 339,000 in May, right? So this might be a false alarm when you compare it to historical standards. But in this article, they say, layoffs were nearly 13% lower in April than in the average month in 2019, according to the Labor Department. Mm-hmm. That's significantly less than pre-pandemic levels, 13%, at a time when that section of, unemployment that the Fed's trying to target, they're attacking that aggressively.
So what you're really highlighting is the fact that there's an inflection point happening.
Yes.
That you're having wages rise, but people are working less hours, which means that at some point wages will come down
mm-hmm. and it goes,
as the curve goes the other way.
And what they're saying is causing all this is employers are really still afraid of losing employees after they've worked so hard to staff up that they would much rather lower their hours of work as opposed to just laying them off, because they're afraid of when they need to start rehiring that these people aren't going to be there.
So I think that's not true anymore. I think the last month has changed a lot of that.
Yeah.
So many employers are saying work from home doesn't work.
Yeah.
And employees are really, really offended by it. And I get it. I mean, I was a proponent of working from home and my position is somewhat shifted and I face all sorts of criticism by it. But most employers are pushing people to come back in the office at least 3 days a week for a hybrid schedule. Mm-hmm. And it's causing a lot of consternation, but you're seeing people like Google, like Microsoft,
right?
These tech companies who've had a lot of layoffs and a lot of pain, they're saying, we're doing this. This is the way that it is.
Right.
I don't think larger companies are going to really stick to the work from home model. Really? I think smaller companies, more nimble companies maybe, but mm-hmm. the larger you are, I think that the more likely it is.
Okay,
and you're starting to see pushback even in Washington. Mm-hmm. Where several of the operating officers for departments that manage staff for the government mm-hmm. are getting caught under fire hardcore about, hey, are you measuring productivity? Are these people working from home? How many days a week are they in the office? And they don't have answers yet.
Right.
And I can tell you that The government led the way, if you recall, during the pandemic, people working from home.
Yes.
And then it was kind of the private sector afterward. Mm-hmm. I really do feel like the government's going to lag in getting back, and the private sector's turned around faster, but you're going to see all of that pivot back. Mm-hmm. And there's also a cultural, generational challenge here where I think we've gotten a little bit of this entitlement culture.
Yeah.
And the employees feel entitled to all these perks they've had for a very, very long period of time. And don't get me wrong, I love all the perks that we have.
Yep.
But I don't think that it's a mainstay anymore. I think that you're lucky to have things like I've never worked in an environment where I had like a full catered kitchen anytime I want to, but a lot of people in the tech sector did.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of that, you're going to have to buy your own lunch, kids.
Yeah, you're going to have to buy your own lunch. But I mean, I don't know. I think it remains to be seen. Maybe it depends on the job. Maybe it depends on the company size, like you say. I mean, I don't think it's far-fetched to think that a company that feels like they can save operational costs on, you know, commercial space, I don't think it's that far-fetched. There's certain sectors I think will operate differently if there needs to be a more collaborative effort, like let's say Bob Iger did with Disney, required everybody to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes more sense for everybody to work together, you know, in a room together.
But what business isn't collaborative? I mean, I'm not facetious. I mean, that in all honesty.
Coding? I don't know.
No, I think it's pretty collaborative.
Really? I don't think so. Arun, what do you think?
No, it is.
Really? How so? I don't know.
Your coding is only one part of a project. Most people don't code end-to-end. They code, like, portions of a project.
Okay.
It's a team project.
Yeah. It's like, a team project. Does
things together and I get there's Slack and all these things. These are the tools. But, you know, I think in a lot of ways, the pain point for people won't be the camaraderie.
Okay.
It'll be the desire to move up in companies and get more money, and they'll be capped out. And the people who are closer to people in management will wind up getting those promotions.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if there's an option to, I think that you should work inside the office.
There is no replacement for actually working with somebody and liking them.
It's not just that, too. I mean, you're a fool to think that there is an office politics.
There's politics and everything in life. There's
politics and everything.
You can ignore them all you want.
But yeah.
They're there. And people who are like, oh, I don't like the politics. I don't like having to do this. I don't like having to do that. Look, these are the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to play or not to play. Just know if you choose not to play,
yeah,
you don't win.
Right. Exactly.
That's just what it comes down to. A lot of people criticize. I think I said this on the Mind Pump podcast when I went on too. Once you get over like the ethical questions of right, wrong, good, bad, and realize you can't change these things.
Yes.
You can only play within the confines of the way the game is played.
Right.
You learn to play the game. And if you choose not to, more power to you for living like this higher moral life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how you get financially wealthy doing that.
Unfortunately, everybody else is playing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, that's the rat race, brother.
Right. Facts.
Facts. No cap. Huh. Mm.
Okay.
Riz in this room right now is on fire.
Fire.
Go off, King.
What is Waller saying?
Waller is...
You know he's that asshole that went above 6% on his dot plot.
A son of a bitch. He is, that guy. U.S. Federal Reserve Governor Waller, Christopher Waller, he's got a sexy first name at least, right? That's what we're talking about. This citing a Reuters article titled, you guessed it, Fed's Waller. Not clear bank failures had a material effect on credit tightening.
Mm.
The fuck you say, Waller? So
you not paying attention, bro?
I got three paragraphs because I read this and got pissed off. And I was like, you know what? Mm. We're going to quote this thing. Okay, we're going to put it out there.
Let's do it.
We're gonna show the world what Waller really is. Okay?
Okay.
Changes in credit conditions since the failure of Silicon Valley Bank in early March are, quote, in line, end quote, with financial tightening that was already underway due to the Federal Reserve interest rate increases and don't yet point to a material shift in how banks are doling out and pricing loans, U.S. Federal Reserve Governor Christopher Waller said Friday while doing lines of cocaine.
Didn't say that.
Maybe not the while doing lines of cocaine thing, but he had to be on something.
Right.
Because no, absolutely fucking not.
Right.
How many banks are not deploying capital? I know a lot of them. Mm. As a matter of fact, I'm willing to go on the record to say I think every single bank in the country is lending less right now.
100%.
That's how confident I am.
That's a fact. Yeah, I believe that wholeheartedly.
Okay? That's just reality. Mm-hmm. And for Mr. Waller
mm-hmm.
to think otherwise, had to be some drugs.
I mean, there's all...
Maybe LSD. I don't know.
Right.
I'm speculative. There's a lot here that leads me to believe he's seeing visions.
Right.
But let's go on. Quoting once again, while lending conditions imposed by banks have tightened since March, the changes so far are in line with what banks have been doing since the Fed Reserve began raising rates more than a year ago, mm-hmm. Waller said at a financial stability conference in Norway. Okay. First of all, hey, Waller, there's a fucking crisis going on in this country. Why are you in Norway?
Yeah, dude, what's going on?
Is this conference in Norway so important that you have to go and shit on us in a different country? Yeah. You can't shit on us here?
Yeah, seriously. Hold on, how come he's not catching any heat and David Solomon's catching all the heat?
David Solomon's a DJ at night. Oh, my God. David, yeah. How can you be the CEO of that bank?
Meanwhile, this guy has the fate of, you know, the economy in his hands, and he's just like, I'll be in Norway.
Yeah. David Solomon donating his entire salary at night
it's a
to
lot.
Charity.
It's a lot.
While they're out in Norway doing drugs, clearly LSD, right? Having a good old time, lying to people in Norway and the United States about the United States,
right.
While he's suggesting the Fed terminal rate needs to be 6%.
Above it. He was that asshole that was above.
Honestly, they need drug checks.
100%.
For the FOMC.
Yeah, does he have any hair? Pull up Christopher Waller.
Start straight up with Jerome Powell.
Does Christopher Waller have any hair?
Let's see for sure he's got hair. Yeah,
wait, would you ask for a sign?
We need a hair sample. Christopher Waller's picture.
He wants to know if he's bald like Cash Card.
Pictures now. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's very, very villain-like of you.
Well,
yeah, honestly.
Last episode, you're like, fuck, why do you always have to take a picture
of
someone?
And I'd like to point out that I didn't know, in no way, shape, or form, thought his image was relevant to this.
I want to do a drug test. I want to get a sample of his hair. I want to see, make sure he had any hair.
So you're telling me if Kashgari were to get drug tested?
That's why he doesn't have any hair.
Eyebrow hair. Oof. Wow. He looks, that is not what I thought Christopher Waller looked like. I'm going to be honest with you.
Neither did I.
He looks very,
what does he look like, Chris?
Like a Harry Potter character. Right?
That
am I wrong?
Actually fucking spot on.
Thank you, right? He looks like a Harry Potter character, right? He for sure carries like a wand made of wood or something.
Yeah, cast spell.
Yeah.
Like a professor at Hogwarts.
Yeah, he looks like a professor at Hogwarts. Great call. Arun and I are a great team tonight. We're on one.
On one, exactly.
All right, well.
Citing Harry Potter.
Moving on up.
Yeah, well, the Federal Reserve's version of Helen Keller here. He goes on.
Wow.
He says financial stresses in the banking sector are a factor that my colleagues, his peers.
Yes.
At Hogwarts and I are closely watching as we determine the appropriate stance of monetary policy. Are you really closely watching it? Because from where I'm looking, it sounds like you have no idea what the fuck's going on.
Right.
Going forward. Okay.
Right.
Waller said, here's a quote. The Fed could tighten policy too much if it ignored, end quote, the possibility that banks were restricting credit more forcefully than needed to lower inflation for fear they might lose deposits or face other liquidity strains. What the fuck are you watching then?
Yeah, exactly. This guy doesn't understand any of this. What's going on?
Let's break this down, okay? Restricting credit more forcefully than needed to lower inflation for fear they might lose deposits. Yes, all banks have fear they may lose deposits. Matter of fact, if you turn on your goddamn TV every once in a while, Waller, you notice there's a little thing called contagion that happened on March 10th.
He can't. He's in Norway.
Norway looking for Harry Potter's real castle. We solved it.
Is that
there it is.
Is that where it was filmed?
He's an agent for the other side.
So he is. He's a double agent.
He's a double agent.
This guy.
Yeah, he's in those train stations, inside the train stations. Only the real Potters would know, you know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't know. I don't catch the reference.
You really?
I told you this before.
I know, but I like making you say it because it makes you sound like an asshole.
Dude, he doesn't know a lot of references. Every time you say, this is the way, just goes over.
Oh, that's right. You don't know this is the way.
Star Wars reference, I get it.
Mandalorian, bro. Not just Star Wars. You got to define the subtext.
Is that
of a Star Wars reference. There's an entire universe, man.
Is that
a
movie or the TV show? I don't know. Is there not a TV show? Am I really messing up here?
Rune, he's making the best possible case for you to be the co-host moving forward right now. I mean, it is. Yeah. Even his was very calming for me.
I give
it. He has nothing. He's trying.
It's very soothing.
Trying hard to
well prepped for this show.
I'm trying to. I'm trying to be the nice guy here. I'm gonna leave it all alone.
You can try to be what you are, man, but look, you can't go against your spots, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. All right. So Waller is disconnected. He goes on to say, might lose deposits or face another or the liquidity strains. Okay. Mm-hmm. Every bank in the country is afraid to lose deposits because they've had liquidity strains.
Absolutely.
I look at this and I think this guy is part of the FOMC.
Yeah.
He's the one who's out there pitching the highest dot plot point.
He's got a voice in those meetings.
A big voice.
Right.
It's baffling to me how materially disconnected this individual, I don't know if Jerome Powell's this disconnected, but it certainly feels that way at moments.
Right.
I'm stunned.
I'm stunned too. I don't know what he's watching, but if the Fed continues to raise rates, do you anticipate banks continuing to increase deposits? I mean, they have to, right?
You mean the rates for deposits?
Yes.
Okay, wow. So this has been something I've been tossing around a lot in my mind as of late.
Yes.
Okay. I've seen a lot of banks that are now hesitant to offer too high of a price for their deposit.
Yes.
Right? Because they don't want to say, hey, look, we're going to go offer 5.5%.
Right.
Because then they're seen as, okay, they're desperate because they're borrowing way more. They're paying way more than they should for deposits to get people to come in, right? That's how desperate they are. And to give you a reference, typically speaking, banks will borrow from their local federal home loan bank, FHLB.
Yes.
Right? Or other liquidity sources. Right now, it's about 3%.
Oh.
Give or take, because the Fed funds, the cost for banks to borrow has increased.
Yes.
So it's about 5.3% of Fed funds terminal rate. Well, fair pursuit with that.
Right.
So if someone's offering deposit rates 20 basis points above that, either you're maxed out on your leverage that your borrowings, mm-hmm. or you're so desperate for cash because you had so much deposit runoff, you're trying to get money in the door with the highest possible rate in the market.
Right.
So now banks don't want to seem desperate. So they're trying to like figure out where they can fall in that realm, right?
And they're probably constantly checking in with their competitors.
To some degree, yes. And to the larger banks, the global systematic important banks, the GSIBs, the Wells, the Chase, the B of A, those big, big, big banks that are, quote, too big to fail.
Right.
They've never really pushed rates up that high because they're like, look, you want security? You come to us. You know we're never going
to
fail.
But yeah, they don't need the
highest rate.
Right.
I think you're going to start seeing a pivot, regardless of what the Fed does, of banks saying, okay, look, we've laid people off. Mm-hmm. We've tried to manage expenses.
Right.
We're trying to make loans at higher rates, but the problem is the yield curve is still inverted.
Yes.
The treasuries, the yield curve, the 3-month treasury, the 10-year treasury, that's the inverted yield curve. Mm-hmm. Because the long end of the curve is actually less in price than the short end of the curve because it's uncertainty in the future market. Those haven't moved up high enough to push loan rates out to really give banks the ability to get more widespread profits so they can't lend at higher interest rates that are in line with the higher deposit rates they have to. Right. They've been demanded on, right?
Right.
So I do think that banks are going to start saying, community regional banks in particular, that have been really, really trying to get out there and get more money in, where the larger banks are saying, look, we're so secure, you want to bring your money here.
Right.
I think they're going to start saying, you know what? We're going to start cutting deposit rates down a little bit. It's gotten too competitive, and it's out of whack with what we can charge on the long end.
In long term for the economy, it may be what's needed to save the economy, right? Because if they don't, and if banks really do have to tighten more than, I don't know, they need to, it's really going to be the factor that's going to push everything over the edge, right? Because...
Well, let's be clear about right now. So Waller's comments, mm-hmm. alluding to the credit tightening cycle, we have not seen that yet.
This is, yeah, that's not fair. That's not fair to the banks right now.
Right now, what you're seeing is a liquidity tightening cycle. Banks don't want to deploy capital right now. If you think the yield curve is going to come out of its inversion, which it typically does, mm-hmm. and rates are going to spike up,
right,
or if you think there's a credit default cycle for things like commercial office real estate coming up,
yes,
why would you make loans right now? Why wouldn't you hoard cash? And for every loan that pays off and you get money coming in that you don't redeploy that capital,
yes,
if there is another run on deposits,
yes,
you have all that money saved that you're not deploying. Now, typically speaking, holding cash is not as profitable as going into securities,
right?
But you saw how that wound up for Silicon Valley Bank.
Right.
They put their money into securities. They bought a bunch of them. And guess what? Those securities, the treasuries that they bought.
But after what we saw the last go around with some of the run on the banks, few of them were well capitalized. So it almost didn't matter how much capital they were holding.
So don't get confused with capital and liquidity.
Okay.
These terms get thrown around a lot, and it took me several years, honestly, to really get my arms around it, and I still struggle at times.
Okay.
All right. Capital for banks is not the same. It's your, think of that as your retained profit.
Yes.
The money that you've made off of lending out loans,
mm-hmm.
paying deposits, the difference between that margin, right?
Right.
The 7% I'm getting on a loan, okay. and that 5% I'm paying you for your money, which I lent out,
okay.
a 2% profit margin,
yep.
that goes into my bank account as capital. I can use that.
Yes.
Even though, but liquidity for a bank
mm-hmm.
is your deposits.
Yes.
Right? It's not money that I actually own. It's my ability to pay back your deposit. That's right. my liquidity.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, here's the problem is when well-capitalized banks who've got a ton of money in reserve, if you will,
mm-hmm.
start losing money, their earnings go negative, you have something called capital erosion.
Mm-hmm.
You're now taking, you're making up the shortfall of the money you're not putting out
right.
in earnings because you're losing money, and you're now bleeding your capital position lower and lower and lower because now you're losing money.
Yes.
And as you do that over time, that capital erosion can happen very quickly. Like, for example, if you're Silicon Valley Bank and you sell billions of dollars of treasuries
mm-hmm.
below the value and take a mark-to-market hit, let's say it's $100 million or $200 million, you have to have $100 million or $200 million in capital to cover that from Absolutely. An accounting perspective.
Right.
And I'm, again, watering down a very complicated, you know, process. So if you're a CPA or you're an auditor and you hate me, don't get at me in the DMs. Get at Saeed. He's the villain.
Always. So
he's the villain.
So for the listeners that, let's say, are banking with a certain financial institution, and let's say they are concerned, right? And they don't want to jump the gun and make a decision on pulling their money out of a bank. What could they look to? Because, you know, there's all this bad press out there. You don't even know what you can trust anymore.
Right. Fundamentals, baby.
Okay, so what are some of the fundamentals they can look to or look for to see if their bank is really one of the ones that are in trouble?
I don't think there are. Well, so there's the Fed has said there's about 30 banks that they're watching across the country. That's the kind of the number that they've thrown out there in random conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I would say we've seen three fail: mm-hmm. Silicon Valley, Signature, and First Republic. So. There are, 4,700 or just under 5,000 banks in the country?
4,700, yep.
So that's not a huge percentage.
No.
And if there are 30 that they're watching, let's say there are 100. That is still not a big percentage.
Right.
So I would say that there's banks that are publicly traded you can look up financials for, and there are some banks that are not publicly traded. You can look at their call report, mm-hmm. which is something that banks have to file with their local regulators, which are now public, right? You can go look up any bank's call report you want to. I would say don't even go look at all this stuff. For the most consumers, unless you're looking to invest in them and you want to see income statements and balance sheets, which you can get all that for publicly traded companies, you can look at call reports. If you want to get into some sophisticated reporting, it's really hard for the consumer to figure those out.
And mm-hmm.
It took me a very, very long time to figure them out myself. Here's what I would say. The odds are your bank, whoever you bank with across the country, is strong.
Yes.
Just that's the statistics.
Mm-hmm.
30, call it 100 out of 4,700.
Yeah.
All good. Most banks are not going to fail. They're not going to wait for the FDIC or the Fed to come in and seize them. They're mm-hmm. going to merge or sell.
Right.
So I would say the overall risk to you, the consumer, is slim to none. You should bank with whoever gives you the best service right now. And God forbid somebody gets taken over. Guess what? Everybody so far has had access to their money on Monday.
Right. It's true. That's so very true.
I don't think there's a lot of risk here.
And if that uninsured portion of your deposits is something you're really that concerned about, at least make sure that it's all insured. You know, there's steps that you can take to make sure that they're insured, right?
Yeah, there is. And again, I haven't heard of anybody having massive losses yet.
No.
So,
yeah,
you know, despite all the fear and the rhetoric out there, I think that there's a lot bigger things to fear. Like mm-hmm. if you were a realtor, for example.
Okay.
I would say that's probably a bigger fear than your bank failing.
A segue.
And that was pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I had to do it myself considering you weren't going to give it to me.
I saw what you did there. I was trying to get you there.
60,000 realtors across the country this year in 2023 have left the business.
Yeah. How much of that is 60,000. How much of it is that do you think people jumping on trying to become a realtor thinking it's going to be easy.
A lot, yeah. I think the majority of them.
And then just saying, like, never mind, this is a lot of work.
But I think there's another 60,000 right behind them of people who are like, I think I'm better than them. They just don't understand. Like, I've made some headway. I'm going to dip. I'm going to go. I'm going to make this happen.
Yeah.
Trying to come up with, every time I try to use hip lingo, it makes me sound stupid. And I use it the wrong way.
Not a dip.
So I apologize. You do. Dip means leave.
I mean, we've had our
stay.
I'm trying to
be lit. Not dip. I don't know.
Oh, man.
It's complicated, bro. I can't. It's like having another language, you know?
Yeah, just not leave it alone. Not for you.
Nah. Why is that, Syed?
Just, you don't make it sound sexy.
Lost the beard power.
You did.
Yeah. My chin went in too far. I don't look pointed anymore. I look like Jafar.
The best part is the last episode you were talking shit about me not having a beard.
Yeah. Karma is real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it hurts.
Well deserved.
I took it right on the chin.
Why economists say it's a near certainty that housing inflation will soon fall. This is from an article from CNBC.
Wow.
Shelter is the largest component of the consumer price index. We know that.
We've been saying that going back to January 1 of 2022.
Mm-hmm. Roughly about 34% of the report.
Yeah. Your eyes twitching at me right now. You told me it would. So
I told you it would.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, yeah.
Read the second bullet point there, Saeed.
The category, therefore, has a big influence on the direction of overall inflation.
You don't say.
Nah.
So remember when we spoke earlier about economists and we were sitting here intellectually talking about how they typically don't look forward. They look at the data that's presented.
Right.
Here's a classic example of that level of dumbassery.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Third bullet point, Chief.
Housing trends feed through to CPI with a substantial lag. Economists think a reversal is essentially guaranteed in the second half of the year.
What?
Stop it.
What?
This is blasphemy.
What?
Shame on CNBC for not quoting the show.
Honestly, if you're gonna quote us directly, I know that we're not like the biggest podcast in the world, but we are the biggest financial literacy podcast in the world.
I mean, number one.
And if you've been listening to the show and you've taken tips and you want to write about it, good job for you. Good for you. I respect that. Mm-hmm. We're here to educate. But you know who doesn't get my fucking respect?
Who?
Mark motherfucking Zandy.
That's his middle name.
Middle name. Motherfucking. He abbreviates it, MF.
He does. Yeah, exactly.
So Zandy at Moody's had said that we were going to see no correction. He actually talked about originally a year ago, prices going up.
Mm-hmm. True.
Year over year. And I was pissed. Mad. All in my feels.
How mad? On a scale of 1 to 10.
I was a solid certified 20.
Really?
Yeah.
20?
20. I was pissed.
Okay.
And yet, despite all that, I was the bigger person. I extended the olive branch to Zandy to come on the show. I got snubbed.
I never understood that F phrase, too, by the way.
Extend the olive branch?
Yeah, what is it? I don't get the reference. Olive branch. Why olive branch?
Because I like to tap people olive branches. You don't?
You like to tap.
Rune. Let's just indulge Saeed's ass backwards thinking. And yeah, there you go. An offer of peace.
No, okay, I get it. Obviously, I know the meaning.
Ever wonder what the phrase extending the olive branch means? It's an offer of peace and extends back to biblical times. Obviously, Saeed is
challenged.
No reference there. The ancient Romans in Greek mythology. A dove brought back an olive branch to Noah to signal the flood had ended. In ancient Rome, the defeated used to hold up an olive branch for peace.
You buy that?
I have no comment on the matter, Saeed.
I'm just asking you. What?
I have no comment as to the religious undertones of the statement. I am choosing to focus on in ancient Rome, the defeated used to hold up an olive branch for peace. Now, if I just had my guts cut open and got my ass kicked, yeah. I'm not sure I'd be looking for olive branches somewhere. I mean, did everybody have an olive field around? Like, was everybody like chilling off? I was like,
hold on, man.
Hey,
is that a dove?
Hey, Aaron, did you bring the olive branch?
Exactly. Imagine being that one guy part of the army, hold the olive branch.
But hold on. Noah didn't say, man, you couldn't bring me anything else? I need something else.
And how big was the branch? It's not like a twig, right? You have to see that shit.
Yeah, he didn't say twig. It said branch.
You're like waving a big fucking branch around with olives on it?
Right.
And how do you know it's olives? You know, I mean,
I would assume there were some olives left remaining on the branch.
I'm pretty sure there's other trees that glow, that grow like, you know, olive-like fruit.
I think so.
Fuck around and find out. Shit, it's, I thought it was an olive branch. Oh my God, it's figs. Run, fuck. You know,
figs.
It's a fig branch.
Extend a fig branch. That sounds way better.
It means something completely different.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to extend to Zandy. So basically this article cites Zandy saying that he's deviated from his position. He talks about U.S. consumer price index year over year going down to 4%. But like we've alluded to many, 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 many times on the show.
Yes.
Rent and rent equivalent make up about 34%. It actually used to be lower, and they've done some of the analytics there. But makes up about 34% of inflation. And we've always said that inflation is like body fat, right? The farther you get down, the leaner you get,
yes,
the harder it is to make the incremental changes to go down farther, which is what the Fed is afraid of, which is why Waller is saying all the stupid shit that he's saying, and Jerome Powell's very reticent to do anything, even though they're looking at lagging indicators as their indication to stop. They know, just as like you now know, and Zandy has just figured out,
right,
so even all of you can be economists,
mm-hmm,
that inflation is largely moved at this point by house prices, which have been obscenely high.
Right. So the article goes on to say that Americans saw rent grow by 4.8% in May from a year earlier. That's up to about $2,048 a month.
Right? Stunning.
Right. Stunning. Right. So that's a significant slowdown from the 15.7% growth during the prior year.
Unbelievable.
So if you just factor that in, right, we saw an unbelievable number of 15.7% this year, 8%. Okay. So guaranteed for it to come down. The article went on further to break down what we've been saying on the show for a long time on how these different regions provide their data every 6 months. So what it went on to say is the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics collects rent data from sample households every 6 months. BLS also divides these sample households into 6 different subgroups called panels and staggers when it collects data from each. Per the BLS, rents for panel 1 are collected in January and then again in July. In panel 2, it's February and then again in August, and so on. So you can see how it's going to take an entire year for all 6 panels to provide all their data.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, as much as we've seen the coastal implications to the real estate values and in some cases rents as well, there's kind of a couple different forces at play.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, supply and demand is not an actual force when affordability is what drives supply and demand.
Yes.
Very misunderstood concept in real estate. Dave Ramsey, realtors, they all like to say there's just not enough supply.
Mm-hmm.
That's all well and good. But if demand changes, then guess what? That supply may be sufficient for the existing demand because people can't afford to buy. So there is an inflection point there as well, which I think is largely misunderstood and ignored.
Mm-hmm.
What Zandy and everybody else are getting to is that you're not going to hit the 2% target inflation rate that the Fed has said over and over and over again that they will not stop until they get to.
Right.
And this is what you get the controversy that you see in the market. This is where you get the market, Wall Street, saying, you know what? We don't believe the Fed. We believe there's going to be interest rate cuts ahead because they believe they're going to break the financial system before they ever get to the 2%.
Right. I mean, I think we did a deep dive on this a couple months back where if all other categories...
I choked a little bit there.
Yeah. If all other categories remained at 0%, you know, in rising inflation, but shelter increased 6%, which where it was at a couple months ago, it still wouldn't hit the Fed's target number.
Nope.
So it has to come down.
There's no other way.
Right.
It's just maths.
Yeah. Just math.
Just the maths.
Just the math.
You had an interesting article in the show notes, which I actually took some time to read. And as much as I want to give Zandy all the smoke, and he deserves it for being... before I go on, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
I'm going to do it. All the economists out there who are now pivoting to say, hey, home values have to come down.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence Yoon at the National Association of Realtors has alluded to something to that effect. Now Zandy, everybody else is getting to the point where we said was going to be an absolute, just had to happen kind of thing now. Mm-hmm. And it pisses me off to no end that we could have been honest intellectually honest with people up front. They knew back then how much of a component shelter was.
Right.
They could have foreshadowed, but just like the science community where nobody wants to be the wacko who goes out on the edge, talk about these new revolutionary ideas, it's got to be proven out, and go to the system and all this other bullshit. Meanwhile, guess what? You, me, everybody else, we suffer.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They could have been honest about the likelihood. And then you bastardize and demonize someone like Noriel Rubini, like Peter Schiff. And don't get me wrong, they've made some outlandish claims that sometimes haven't been true,
right.
Haven't gotten there. But those outlandish claims aren't because they're bad people or they're mm-hmm. crazy economists.
No.
It's because they're trying to see things objectively different and trying to be an outlier. You got to respect that.
Well, yeah, the effort or the attempt, but it goes back to what you said earlier in the show. Right, they just look at the data that's in front of them.
Right? It's easy to be a conformist and do that, though.
Yeah,
that's why so many of these economists piss me off, and that's why mm-hmm. someone like Zandi, who is a very, very intelligent man,
yes,
I could not do his job,
mm-hmm.
and his understanding of the economy is way better than mine. And the reason why I wanted him on the show is I respect his opinion immensely on some of these things, and I'd like to prod and get like more of like a future, like, hey, if this, then that kind of conversation going.
Right.
But that being said, you know. He snubbed us.
He did. He
so now him. I have to say that I have no respect, even though I do.
Right. Never going to forget.
So your article that you had was talking about multifamily prices, right? Was it? Or
yeah, I didn't quite understand it. All it said was that this article went on to say, I believe it's from Yahoo Finance, U.S. apartment values will plunge a further 20%, economists say. Wall Street still sees major upside in the REITs. Be greedy when others are fearful. So I didn't quite understand why, because we understand why commercial real estate is expected to come down in value a little bit, because if they have, you know, a higher vacancy, then the cash flow isn't going to be there and their values are primarily based off the income approach. So if the income's not coming in, the value is going to come down, right?
Okay.
But this article goes on to say that 20%, the values for multifamily properties are expected to come down approximately 20%. And I don't know if that's because asking rent is coming down.
So again, this ignores another one of those kind of scale tipping mechanisms, right? So
yes.
If home values don't come down,
mm-hmm.
people have to rent.
That was always the thing that I adored most about the multifamily space.
Adored? You were in love with it?
Well, just because I remember back in the Great Recession, less than 1% of all multifamily loans defaulted. And that it was for that exact reason, right? Because
people will always guard where they live. Before defaulting on, they'll default on their credit card. They'll default on their cars.
Mm-hmm.
They generally, the last thing they default on is their home.
Their homes, right? Or the space that they're renting, and they need a place to live. So if you can't afford to own a home, you're going to make sure that you can afford your rent.
So the only thing that I've seen that even suggests that this would be remotely possible is that certain sectors of multifamily,
mm-hmm.
particularly those in the Sun Belt, and for those of you who aren't familiar with the Sun Belt region, think about it as like the smile states, if you will, from like California to maybe New Mexico to
Phoenix, right?
Phoenix to Texas, all the way up through Florida.
Yes.
Right? Kind of that lower smile, if you will, portion of the state.
Hmm.
That region has more high-end multifamily coming online than ever before in history. Across the country. I think high-end luxury multifamily might see more vacancy and a lowering of rents.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see workforce housing in major metropolitan areas, Los Angeles, Dallas, New York.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that having vacancy issues.
I can see San Francisco.
Yeah, I think San Francisco's got a whole different
I mean, when you have
problem there.
You know, Westfield Mall leaving, Nordstrom leaving, Safeway leaving, Whole Foods.
Did I put that in the show notes?
That was last episode.
I thought about I didn't talk about the multifamily or the hospitality stuff, right?
No, we did not.
So I read something and I haven't vetted this out. So
you sent it to me.
I sent it to you, but I didn't think I put it in the show notes. Hospitality across the country, because we know that consumer discretionary spending hasn't pulled back. We know that airlines are up 26% year over year according to inflation, right?
Yes.
Airfare tickets.
Mm-hmm.
We know people are still traveling.
Right.
So as a natural byproduct of that, guess what? The hospitality industry across the country, hotels are up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're making more money than ever. They're actually seeing way more increases.
Every time we do a jobs report, they're like the leading candidate in adding jobs.
Yeah, they add jobs. Except in one notable area. San Francisco is down 30% on occupancy for hospitality.
I love San Francisco. 30%. I don't like seeing this happen in San Francisco.
I look, my comment on social media was like, my wife and I, our first date was in San Francisco. We had a wonderful time.
Yeah.
You know, and we went up there and we did just played in the city. I mean, it was just simple as that. Like, go and have a good time. And
yeah, I have great memories in San Francisco. Odun and I, we used to go to San Francisco like 3-4 times a year. One time, notably, we went up to San Francisco when we were young, stupid, nothing else better to do. We decide to go up to San Francisco. We leave here at 10 p.m. at night, get to San Francisco early in the morning just to have lunch at our favorite kebab house spot, and then came back home. Yeah. Just to say we did it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never did that.
Not a fan?
No, I just only driving to San Francisco.
Really? Well, I mean, that's all we do back then.
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind, flights back then were like,
was it?
Cheap. If you took Southwest, you know, back then you fall apart.
Road trips are fun, though. You're not a road trip guy, are you?
I'm just a big dude. I'm big. So
awkward, yeah.
Sitting in, awkward seems unnecessary.
Yeah.
I'm just bigger.
I feel like if we went on road trips with you, you'd just be on your phone the whole time.
Now I would. Now I would. Then I wouldn't. Now I've just got too many like businesses and stuff like going on.
Yeah.
It's hard not to be. I was at Disneyland today, like having conversations. I was like, oh shit, about this, about that. And I was thinking about work and making phone calls. And I get it. I get that I'm that asshole.
No, it's not an asshole. I get it.
It's just, it's, and then I always think about, if I'm sitting in the car doing nothing. I'm wasting time.
You feel that overcomes you, huh?
Yeah, because I know that I'm never really up to date or caught up. So if I, like right now, my email inbox just for one like job is like 784 emails behind.
But then, I mean, so I would imagine though with Joanna and Carter, you do a good time of creating a time where it's like being present in the moment.
I try to do that to the extent that I can, but the problem is like I can't have a hard and fast rule of when that time is because life just moves in ways you don't expect.
Way too fast, yeah.
Yeah, so I try to find time to do that. Like actually, the reason why I wore these pants today to Disneyland, my wife doesn't know this. Is the both pockets have zippers on the inside.
Okay.
I'll put my phone in and zip it up. And then I won't touch it to the extent that I can.
Got it.
And then I also don't have to worry about it falling out and stuff like that. But I physically like to put it in my pocket and know that I can't like just go in there and just grab it.
Right.
So it becomes very Pavlov dog of like you're like, oh, I'm bored. Let's look at our phone.
Yeah, but nothing bothers me more when you have guests over and they come over to your house and they're like on their phone the whole time. It's like, come on, man, like came over to spend time with me, not be on your phone.
No, I don't go to your house to spend time with you.
You don't?
I go for the free food.
I was cooking.
Yeah. Cook,
man. Yeah.
Bake our ass off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I put an article in the show notes, actually, trying to find a way to segue this in, but I couldn't.
So you're just going to force it in?
I'm just going to force it in.
Jam it right in.
See, Odun? Nothing.
What? You started it.
Whoa. Is there a connotation you're concerned about with jam it right in?
No, that's you. Come on. You knew what you were doing there.
I have no idea what your reference you're making right now.
Villain, you.
I am not a villain.
Oh, but the difference, Saeed, is Chris says it and just keeps going. He doesn't wait, stare at you, awkward
pause. He reiterated it twice. Are you saying that he didn't?
I did not jam it in.
Got it.
I did not.
So, right now, there's an article from the Wall Street Journal. Tech stock boom pits AI against the Fed.
This is what you wanted to jam in?
That's what I wanted to jam in.
You wanted to jam AI into the Fed?
Want to jam. Yeah. This is another one of those data points that I feel like is really hurting our fight against inflation. The Fed does not like to see stuff like this, right?
I don't really get.
So let me tell you why.
The reference.
So right now, what the tech, one of the things that the Fed would like to see is there be a greater debt burden on consumers, right? Debt obligations go up as far as like, let's say your credit card. We talked about it, almost $1 trillion in credit card debt. Right? More money has to be allocated to everyone's debt, leaving less money for consumer discretionary spending or even investing.
So to be clear here, like we've said on the show over and over and over and over and over again, the Fed is not intending to put people out of work and lower wages and cause consumer discretionary spending to pull back, meaning you spend less money. But these are the natural byproducts of what happens.
Right.
And until they start seeing everyone do it and those implications, they're not going to stop.
They're not going to stop. Exactly. And here's the so what this article, why I thought was pretty fascinating is what they called out. Typically in the past, if the Fed, historically speaking, if the Fed came out and said, we're going to raise rates, or we're going to keep rates where they are to the end of the year, people bought in. people would believe in what the Fed has to say.
Yeah, they don't believe it now.
This is the best example of a case where people are not buying it. So even the NASDAQ composite is...
You couldn't fit that in earlier when I was talking about people not believing what the Fed was saying anymore?
Right, I was trying to, but you kept going and I didn't want to interrupt.
Yo, I got a flow.
Man. You got a good flow going.
Sometimes you just got to let the peacock spread its wings.
I have to, right. It was just so beautiful.
Peacock.
You are peacocking. So the NASDAQ composite is coming off its 8th consecutive weekly gain. It's the longest streak since a 10-week run through March of 2019. So last year, a lot of people that thought that the sell-off in the market in 2022 was largely in part because of what the Fed was doing, right? But this year, fast forward to this year, there's a rally, a tech rally, especially in this AI space. A lot of people are buying in.
Can I make a blanket general statement, which I think will surprise many?
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole idea of AI is overblown.
Wow, that, yeah, that...
I love the technology. I use it all the time. I think it's very valuable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think it's a gold rush waiting to happen right now? No. Not yet. I think it will be.
Eventually will be, right. Oh, right now, no. It's in its beginning stages.
Yeah, but do I... Right now, it's almost a little, you know, yeah, I would say niche-y, cachet kind of thing.
I have some friends that are really messing around in this space, and their belief is... If you don't start messing with it and learning with it now, like, you're going to be ass backwards.
You do. I use it all. I've learned prompting the right way and asking the right questions, but it's not hard, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, here's the thing. There's some incremental beneficial utility on things like creating images, like Adobe. We played with Photoshop.
Yes.
They have the Firefly, their video editing version of it that's out now. It's cool. You can do the same thing with edit.
Right.
You have, you know, ChatGPT. You can't. That's just amazing. For things that are on the internet that you're looking to, like, pull from,
right?
It's great. Rather than to search stuff on Google and having to filter through questions, you can just ask ChatGPT.
Yeah.
I pay for the subscription. You and I had that conversation at your party.
Yeah.
Or at Arun's party, sorry. I think there's tons of value. But I think a lot of these AI projects will wind up being like those offshoot NFT projects.
Mm-hmm.
They'll blow up. They'll get a little bit of fame. Then they'll kind of go away as people, like,
I think what's going to make it as big or as popular as... people project it to be is the trust and faith in it, right? I mean, if you're going to ask ChatGPT, you know, you could ask ChatGPT to write you a business plan for X business, right?
It really can in some circumstances.
In some, but
if
here's
it's
the
like
thing,
technical it's, sector requirements, like banking stuff like that,
right?
It's only going to be able to pull from what's on the internet, and so much of like banking regulation is not on the internet,
right? So it could be used for a nice springboard to get you off the ground and started,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But everything would need to be, you know, curtail to whatever it is you're trying to really accomplish. But you're going to have to really trust in it versus like if you Google that, right, there'll be a list of, you know, sources and you have to search through and create your own based on that, which I personally like more. I feel like you'll learn more that way.
Well, yeah, but let me put it this way. You wouldn't ask a kid to put together a book report and put together a bibliography anymore, would you?
No, I don't see why. No.
Do kids still go to the library and like pull books and use the card system?
My kids do.
Oh, really? They actually go through and use the card system in the
library? My wife takes them once a week.
Okay. Do most kids do that?
I don't know. I don't know. I doubt it. I would doubt it, but...
And is it really a card system they're using in the library now or is it all digital?
What do you mean? They have a card that they scan.
No. Not like, oh, wow, you don't even know what I'm talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
He's talking about like finding the book.
Oh, yeah. So they go
a card system to find books.
No, so Adam and Arya will both go to the computer. They'll search a book that was recommended to them. It'll tell them the aisle and where it's at, and then they'll go and they'll find it.
Okay. All that information used to be in a dedicated card system inside of a library.
Yeah.
You'd have to go through
that would take way too long. Yeah, that's not efficient. But as far as reading the books and maybe writing a report on it, absolutely. I feel like if I were to, you don't grasp what whatever the book is trying to teach you unless you sit down and read it and think it through over a long period of time.
I get that, but keep in mind, the whole podcast industry is essentially people who are looking to self-enrich themselves in some way.
Yes.
Whether it's a distraction with humor or it's a show, mm-hmm. or it's a self-help kind of sector.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that that is.
Long form.
Those are also readers. Mm-hmm. People are pivoting big time to ingesting content through listening to it,
right,
versus reading it. And frankly, if they're still taking it in the same way, they're still getting the information,
right,
whether they're reading it and digesting it or hearing it. Because so many people are audible, you know, or visual listeners.
But I feel like there's the science is out there on learning. There's different ways of learning. People do better at learning through different ways.
So my point is over time, I don't know that reading in and of itself is going to be the way to beta test somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
We know more that now than we did when we were kids.
Yeah.
Where I think there's a good argument to be said for some people learn better from hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people learn better from seeing.
Some people just learn better from doing themselves, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know that a book report has the same value that it once did. Not to mention the fact that you could easily just say, hey, ChatGPT, give me a summary, a detailed summary of this book.
Yeah, but I don't. If I were to do that and I were to ask my kids to do that, you know, a week from now, that messaging is gone in one ear out the other.
Yeah, but you're also ignoring the fact that kids don't care about the messaging. They want efficiency to get the project done.
No, kids, right?
Most kids do that. Most kids, when they're getting through an assignment, they just want to get it done so they can go out and do whatever it is they really want to do.
Right, but that's not why it was given to them initially to begin with. It was probably given to them for the messaging.
But do you think that these kids care?
No, but now the question, that's a different question. The question is, should they care?
We should all care, but that doesn't mean my whole point goes back to the whole like book report thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there value in doing it that way anymore? I think the answer is no.
Mm.
I don't think there is. I think there's value in saying, hey, show me how to solve this equation from a geometry class. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good value in that. Mm-hmm. You can do it on paper. You can do it right there.
Show
mechanical.
You the step-by-step. That's one thing that it could probably be used really great for, right? Showing you the step-by-step process.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But book reports, I don't know that you're going to get that the same value. Or here's an interesting thing.
I'll be honest. I don't want my kids to not have to do book reports. I want them to.
I know. I can tell because you're old school.
Yeah.
But the reality is, whether you like it or not,
mm-hmm.
when I went to school, when I was in college, and I use college.
I make Adam do book reports at home, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, that's fucking weird.
Yeah.
That's a whole different weird thing. My son goes to Kumon, and we teach him. I mean, don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
Book report's a whole new level, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put it this way. Your kid goes to school in college mm-hmm. in how many years?
How many years is that? 13 years?
13 years from now?
Yeah. Oh, no.
No
11 years from now.
11 years from now. I was going to say, yeah. bro. Yeah, what are you
yeah,
talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah.
11 years from now, Adam goes to college.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to carry a backpack full of books.
Yes.
He's going to have one
iPad. I would hope not. That system is completely outdated. I mean, they should be doing that now, but they're not.
Okay.
And should have been doing it.
11 years from now, one iPad.
You would hope so.
Okay. Which means he can search, which means he can scroll through and find words,
mm-hmm.
which means you can probably use other online tools to get answers.
Right.
Again, I don't know how valuable our traditional way of educating is going to be.
Right.
And I don't know that AI is going to change that in and of itself. I think what's going to change that are open APIs that tap into AI.
Right. Interesting.
But
so there was actually, so just real quick, just to wrap up this article, there was one quote in this. I can tell you didn't read this article.
No, I want to read your articles.
Because we would have been talking about this. So they go on to say, check this. The market's basically saying we don't believe you. This is what this Brad Conger, Deputy Chief Investment Officer at...
Chief?
Huh?
Deputy Chief Investment Officer?
Are you really...
Arun.
Are you calling me out on my mistakes?
He said cheap. Did he not say cheap? Cheap, cheap.
Or you do that a lot more than he does.
Stop!
Deputy Chief Investment Officer at Hurdle Callaghan. He noted that U.S. stocks rallied the day after last week's Fed meeting, with the S&P 500, Dow Jones Industrial Average, and NASDAQ Composite all closing at their highest levels. Eves is among the analysts who believes the Fed is done. Listen to this. Here's the quote. I feel like there's a better chance of me playing in the NBA than the Fed raising two more times.
Wow. Wow, he went hard.
Come on. Wait, seriously?
Wow.
It's that kind of shit right there? That shit right there
mm-hmm.
is the kind of stuff that gives people the optimism and they continue to act the way that they are.
Look, I get that. I get that. Well, here's what he's trying to say without saying it, okay? The system strain is so visible and palpable if you're in the field, really connected to what's going on out there.
Right.
that you say, okay, what comes next ain't good for the consumer.
Is it though?
Ain't good for the housing market.
But wait, is it that visible?
Yes.
Okay, because unemployment only ticked up 3.7. You said, not enough for me to believe that, you know, we're in the clear, right? Mm-hmm. We just said the NASDAQ and the S&P are both up. I think the S&P is up like 16% year to date.
And again, so all these things are really taking a look at the discounted cash flow analysis that is stock values. Mm-hmm. And people are buying them, driving values up, which brings those sectors and the S&P and those indices up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I don't think it's that visible that the Fed's looking at all this like, man, we've been able to do all this so far. People are still doing well in the stock market. Mm-hmm. People haven't lost. I mean, there's still two jobs to every unemployed person. Right. It makes the Fed feel like they still have room to operate.
Because our previous FOMCs and our previous Fed chairs knew something that this team doesn't know,
mm-hmm,
or hasn't stopped to think about.
Okay.
1980s. Fear of hyperinflation.
Yes.
Rates got as high as 20%. Paul Volcker increases interest rates 50 basis points, 50 basis points,
mm-hmm,
50 basis points. Over and over and over again until he got to 10% consecutive.
Yeah.
He knew it was going to take this monumental effort over time consistently to get there.
Yes.
Going to the next era.
Okay.
I believe it was the Bernanke-Greenspan era. 25 basis points.
Mm-hmm.
25 basis points. Consistently. Over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
To once again fight inflation. They knew it took time and consistency to bring inflation down to a number that they felt was healthy, 2 to 3%, which ultimately was the number put in place by that same segueing out team.
Right.
Right? So, Bernanke, Yellen, now, JP.
JP from the hood.
Right? I think they thought they could expedite this process. When they missed the reality that increasing consistently over time,
yes,
allowed you to see the results over time in a very thoughtful, pragmatic way. Mm-hmm. But what did we do? 25 basis points, 25 basis points, 50 basis points, 50 basis points, 75 basis points, 75 basis points, 75 basis points, right. 50 basis points.
Almost like a bell curve.
25 basis points. Exactly.
Right.
And I think that was a huge mistake.
Really?
If you would have spaced that out over time,
mm-hmm,
like I've said from the very, very beginning, I don't disagree they needed the increase in interest rates.
Well, so far we haven't seen it.
Seen what?
So, Volcker's way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Caused double dip recession.
Yes.
Okay. So, if JP from the hood can get out of this with a single recession?
I think they took a risk.
Mm-hmm.
I think they took an unprecedented tact to try and see if it works. And it remains to be seen if it will.
Obviously, like, it hurts the sector that I work in. I wish they didn't do it this way, right? But if I'm looking at it, grand scale, big scale, right? Bird's eye view. Mm-hmm. And it only causes one recession. You got to think the FOMC is thinking, oh, that's a win?
Maybe. Depends on what that recession looks like. Depends on...
Right, depends on how deep it is.
I would argue that they've already made a mistake before they even started. And their knee-jerk reaction was an unprecedented set of events to try to cover up for the fact that they knew they made a mistake by waiting a year too long. Now, in their defense, unprecedented pandemic, unprecedented sets of circumstances which got them to where they were,
okay,
they reacted too late. That's just widely understood to be normal now.
Okay, so put on your Kashkari helmet.
Ooh, it's so smooth underneath that helmet.
So smooth. Okay. How do you think this plays out where he thinks you did good? We did what, some people lost their jobs,
I don't think people losing their jobs impacts their thought process of good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think they think they'll do well when inflation gets down to 2 to 3%.
Oh, you don't care. As long as we hit our outcome, it was a win?
Yeah. Now, I do think it's going to be a lot more difficult to hit their outcome than they recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Housing has proved to be resilient.
I think if they can hit their 2% target from the very beginning, the summary of economic projections, from the beginning has said their projections went out all the way up to 2025. Mm-hmm. The fact that anyone thought that this was possible by now is crazy. Okay?
Yeah, and I think that that speaks to the lacking indicator effect of what we're talking about in the economy. But again, I go back to the same premise that just stuns me. Every single time I have this debate with anybody, I actually went at my buddy, the Data Deli on Instagram.
Oh, okay.
Right? Dave Myers.
Yeah.
Or Meyer. He was commenting that, you know, hey, home values should... He was commenting, he was quoting somebody else. It wasn't like his direct input, but he was co-signing a little bit of the idea that home values are going to be resilient and supply and demand is still an issue. Mm-hmm. So home values should be propped up. Again, doing this classic economist thing, looking backwards for data.
Right.
And not really looking forward for potential future.
Right.
I don't understand how so many smart people can miss this concept. Mm-hmm. And they go like, oh, Patrick Bet-David is so negative and he thinks the economy is going to shit and we don't see that. And it's like, well, again, show me a way to get to 2 to 3% inflation without home values coming down. Show me a way.
Oh.
Show me something that's going to prop up people's ability to buy, affordability.
Mm-hmm.
Show me how we get there, because if there is a way, I just don't see it. And I've never had anybody be able to articulate it to me.
Right.
How do you get to 2 to 3% inflation, that 34% rent to rent equivalent of inflation?
Right.
How do you move the core inflation down to 2 to 3% without moving that?
Right. At some point, these sectors that haven't shown to be that interest rate sensitive will get hurt by the tightening of the credit cycle. Right. When that happens, businesses won't continue to grow. Other sectors will have to have layoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to impact other people. And God forbid, some of these first-time home buyers that are only putting down like 3.5%. And now, what if they lose their jobs, mm-hmm. right? Values come down low.
Home values going in the way. Yeah, that's a problem. A
big problem, right? So I can see a world where that happens. But I see it as cash in the homies, bring down inflation 2%, and they're able to maintain unemployment somewhere around that 5% range. That's a win. That's a huge win for them. Even though we never saw it that way, right? I see it going much higher than 5% eventually.
Unemployment?
Yes.
It typically increases and caps out after the end of a recessionary economy.
Yes.
Which we haven't even declared in a recessionary economy yet.
Right.
So
yeah. Yeah. We're still on the fringe.
We're still on the fringe. Well, look, we beat that up pretty badly. Mm-hmm. Let's leave everybody with a happy, positive thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The U.S. government is paying $1.3 billion in interest on its debt every single day.
That's the good news?
That's the good news.
Yeah, so...
So no matter how bad your financial position is, it could always be worse.
No. They're actually in a better position because they could just raise the debt ceiling and figure this shit out later.
For the 80th time next time.
Yeah. Number 80.
Number 80, baby.
The big 80.
Maybe they should throw like a blowout party for that.
$1.3 billion. We talked about this before.
Day. Every single day. At this point, it's not real money.
No,
it's
man.
It's just a number.
I mean, if rates stay this high for another year or so, I'm curious to see what funding gets cut. Because it hasn't been this high in over 14 years.
Well, I'm sure they'll send a lovely little letter over to Neel Kashkari & Co. and say, hey, guys, having a little financial difficulties over here.
Yeah.
Think you could help us out by lowering some rates? What do you think?
Yeah, come on, please.
You feeling like, politically that might be a good move?
Right.
Yeah? Uh-huh. Election year this year. Going to name some new FOMC heads.
Yeah, exactly.
Want to toss your name in there? Let me know.
That's not conspiratorial. That's really what happened.
Just trying to hook you up, homie. Right. Ariel Rubin is looking like a great candidate right about now.
He would never. Dude, his cachet right now? Come on. Why would he?
Oh, he would love to do it.
You think he would?
Oh my God, he would love to do it.
No way.
Head of FOMC?
Head of FOMC is different story.
I don't know, man. I'd rather be the head of FHLB. Federal Home Loan Bank.
Yeah, why?
$2.4 million salary versus $230,000 salary for Jerome Powell. Get the fuck out of here, meow.
Yeah.
You can keep all your glory in your CNBC.
What about your service?
I'll quietly work in the background, making that cake.
That's not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Can't do a whole lot. So the country can do a whole lot more for me. You're paying $1.3 billion interest a day, everybody. You can pay me a couple million dollars a year.
Exactly.
Ain't no big deal. And I'll make you some money that you can use to not pay down all your debt. Win-win.
Win-win?
Yeah.
Think you could do that job, huh?
No.
No.
But I like to think that I can.
Yeah, okay.
But no.
No. Got it.
Because I know that I'm the kind of guy who people look at and go, does he have a mullet? What happened to his chin?
What happened? Got to check out the YouTube video for this one, guys.
It's not too good. I've been trying to give you guys a side angle the whole show. Well, here's where we say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody.
I just said that.
No, but I'm the one.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation on the Higher Standard Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow on whatever platform you are listening to this on. If you like this episode, please write a review and share it with us. You're getting the show up and running right now, so every message, every review, and every note counts. This show exists to showcase what's possible when leaders decide to uphold a higher standard for their businesses, their investments, their families, and most importantly, themselves. If you want to see more of my content, I post daily on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, so be sure to follow me on your favorite social media platform. And with that, it is a wrap. And as always, I look forward to hanging with you all on the next episode.